Thanks, Cheryl. Hello, everybody here in the room, and anybody that might be listening on the radio. I'd like first to start with the prayer from NTI Acts, right at the very beginning in chapter one. Father, I do not know what is best for me now. In this time and this place, that I may be led back to you. Because I cannot see the path I am ready to walk, take my hand and send me your voice to guide me. I shall go where it asks me to go, and I shall do as it asks me to do in joy and peace and certainty. And the last piece of that says, you must trust. As you listen for guidance, you must trust. Trust in the voice you receive, and trust that you will follow through. Don't doubt your guidance, just trust what comes. And so I wanted to begin with that, because that particular prayer speaks to me in a very loud way. And as Anne was sharing about the breath part, where you're sitting there telling yourself, breathe, 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 and noticing that you're holding your breath, almost holding your breath as you're instructing the mind. And there's this like massive resistance going on in the fact that you're not breathing. And I have that happen occasionally too, where in a lot of Karen Worth's meditations, the beginning instructive part of it is to use the breath to bring us back to the single-pointed focus of awareness. And because breath work in the tradition of, yoga or meditation or any sort of breath work. I think Diedrich does some breath work sometimes in his workshops. It's never had a an appeal to me as part of a practice. It just hasn't, jived with me, and it's just, one of those facts. And so even when I hear Karen instruct to, watch the breath and use the breath as that instrument to which I can be drawn back in. When I do notice my breath as she's instructing, my breath seems to be pretty shallow. There doesn't seem to be this, deep breathing in and deep exhaling. It just seems to be more natural that I have sh a shallow breath going on. Yet when I'm not instructed in any way, past that initial point that Karen tries to help us use the breath, some people that might really work for. For me, it just doesn't seem to work so well. But what I have noticed is that when I simply let go of, any pressure I put on myself to, use the breath, use the breath, use the breath. And I just dismiss that as maybe not a helpful pointer to me. What I notice is that several times during the meditation, when I've returned to that quiet place, away from the thoughts, away from, any pressuring to constrict myself to an instruction of any sort. I notice that I automatically, every once in a while, will just breathe very, very deeply and exhale deeply. It's almost like this a natural inhalation and exhalation, and it just feels more of my own. Not even something that I'm concentrating on. It just happens naturally. So I always feel thankful for that. But I just wanted to share that little that little thing there. So yeah, the breathing, yep. Today, our thought for the day, all pain is a symbol. Pain of any kind is a symbol that you are not living from the center. Pain of any kind is a symbol that you have forgotten who you are and you are living an act. Pain of any kind is a symbol that it is time to stop and remember. It is time to stop and reach within. It is time to stop and be at peace. And when I first read that thought of awakening, the word pain has a lot of past associations as well as present associations with it. And it's surrounding either the body or emotional pain, some kind of pain in the mind, both of which have nothing to do with the truth of who I am. The center, living from the center, living from the true self, the self that I really am, that self is never in pain of any kind. It might be the noticer of the body pain or the mental pain, but those physically experienced pain or emotionally experienced pain, felt pain, those simply reflect that I've forgotten when they become paramount in my the time and attention that I give to those symbols, the pain of the body, the pain in the mind, the pain of an emotional experience, whatever feelings I seem to be dealing with. They're simply symbols. They're simply those bits of darkness that were talked about in yesterday's lesson that are I think it was yesterday's lesson that are, or maybe the day before, I don't know, I can't keep track, but that are thrown my way as a as an appearance in the mind or a sensation in the body that are given to me so that I might remember the truth. Again, it says it's time to stop and reach within when that pain becomes the focus of my attention, where I can't think of anything else but, say, the body pain. So I'll just read my thoughts on that, my contemplation on that. Physical pain, and because I, fairly recently had a lot of physical pain and I'm still experiencing some physical pain with sciatic nerve issues. And this morning I woke up, and while it's not painful, there was a shift in my hearing on my right side. And it's not that I can't hear, but it's almost like there is a, I don't know, like when you go up in an airplane and you feel sort of blocked, that's how it feels, and it has not subsided. So it's not a pain sort of a thing, but what I recognized was that if my attention is focused on that in any extended way besides first just the simple noticing of it and seeing as it as symbolic of forgetting who I really am and placing my attention there instead, it's one of those things that draws my attention away. It's important to notice those little things too, but at any rate, physical pain seems to occupy my attention or focus more readily than, say, emotional pain. Emotional pain can seem a little sneakier in how it shows up. Whereas physical pain is glaring in its bodily experience. Both are darkness, given so you have unmistakable windows of opportunity to step from old patterns of thinking, misplaced emphasis on externals as cause. Attention diverted to bodily malfunctions, whether naggingly small situations or major pain, it matters not to the sense of I whose purpose is pain. Attention diverted is all the false I cares about. To be lost in thinking about some form of upset, scheming for solutions, having conversation with myself in my mind about something past or future. And then in parentheses, I put, and who is talking to who? Are there two of you? And Anne touched on that as well, where there's this conversation going on in the mind, and there seems to be two sides to the conversation, only there's only one of you. There's only one of you. So who are you having a conversation with? Who are you, volleying this thinking back and forth? It seems as if there's somebody saying something and somebody replying to that. And it's still all you. There's only one of you. It's all going on in your own mind as if there's some sort of dual action going on there when there's not. It's you doing it all. So again, to be lost in thinking about some form of upset, scheming for solutions, having conversation with myself in my mind about something past or future. That thinking can go unnoticed for a while and unquestioned. Scrutiny or critical observation requires a willingness to investigate what the mind is doing. Notice the pain or lack of ease, the anxiety, the wish to control, be right, judge, all of that. Notice that pain as soon as possible. Come back to quiet consciousness. Be the noticer, that which rests. As pain continues to show up in many disguises, some obvious, some not so obvious, it is critical for a lasting sense of experience of peace that all pain be used for healing, not sidetracking you from true purpose. Don't forget the windows of opportunity provided through pain to return home to quiet consciousness. And that was that. Yeah, and you're like a change in pressure. Yes, like a change in pressure within my ear of some sort, almost like, if I'm still and I'm listening to it, which seems weird because it's my ear, it's not that, again, that I can't hear. Don't even really know how to describe it. It's just a very subtle, constant, like a mini distraction of some sort. So it's just a bit of a shift. But again, only my focus on this body form and all of what occurs there. And it daily it's different. So in changing, which tells me that that's why it's symbolic. It's not symbolic of the truth of me at all. Yes, these are, experienced occurrences within the illusion, but illusion itself is symbolic. It's not even real. And this is just another temporary form showing up as a bit of darkness to once again distract full attention from going within to be the noticer that or consciousness that contains all that is seems to be happening, but is unaffected, unaffected. Doesn't change at all. It never experiences any sort of anxiety or upset, no matter what is going on or not going on. It's always completely calm, quiet, and at peace because it only reflects itself in everything and looks beyond, what the mortal mind wants you to notice. That objective consciousness that wants you to be conscious of things outside of yourself rather than what is within and what's going on within the mind. So yeah, it's a party a minute lately I once had a friend who said getting older is not for the faint of heart, and I often think of him as I find myself creeping through time and having different things go wrong. And my husband once had a fella, his car broke down, and when he took the car in for service, and he said something to the mechanic like, yeah, it was running fine, a half an hour ago, and now it's not. And the mechanic was some old Southern guy in North Carolina, where we lived in North Carolina, and he was like, yes, sir, that's the way it is. One minute it's working, and the next minute it ain't, And we've laughed about that ever since because that's how it goes. That's how it goes. And within each of those moments, we don't have to, but the choice is, do I want to attach to the experience or attach to the pain or attach to wanting to control the situation or attach to wanting it to be different, all those conditioned ways of reacting, or is my practice becoming so integrated that I am remembering more and more often and more quickly to return to the center. And that's all our meditations are all about. Karen is instructing us to, go to that center through various techniques. Go to that center and rest in that center. So, okay, we are going to start now with Experience Your Perfect Soul. We are beginning on page 242 in the section called The Heart of Understanding. And this is the last piece of Experience Your Perfect Soul. It's chapter 7 by Elise Morgan. And so, again, if you have the book, we're beginning on page 242. And it's called The Heart of Understanding. Come, come unto me and rest in complete joy. Let there be no evasions. No roundabout pathway. The simple, honest way leads directly to the heart of understanding. And that's the end of that section, the heart of understanding. It's pretty straightforward. The part that jumped out at me was let there be no evasions or roundabout pathways. And one of the questions we were asked in last week's Thoughts of Awakening is, what do I truly want? And on that particular day, I noticed during the course of the day all the things that I seemed to want. And I'm telling you, it was like mind-boggling. As a personal, individual, individuated body mind, paying attention to everything that it seemed to want, just from the dumbest of things, like, for instance, as some of you may recall, we're building a home, and it's about, I don't know, maybe 6 weeks from being finished. And so this has been the strangest building process I've ever been involved in my life. They really don't want the homeowners to come to the property to see what's going on, to investigate it all, to hold up the process in any way, shape, or form, even if things are going awry. And my controlling personal self, my perfectionistic tendencies, that goes against my grain in so many ways that, and I'm literally like, I walk every morning, and so I walk from the rental over to where they're building our house and see what's going on. And they want you to go through this very involved process of calling the designer that you worked with to coordinate everything that was supposed to go in the house and go through her, and then she contacts the person in charge, and then he contacts the subcontractor that, and I'm like, well, wait a minute, I walk over there and the subcontractor's right there, and I can directly communicate to him that, whatever it is that I need to say. And I'm thinking in my own mind, communication is peace. And it's so much less time that has to solve these issues that come up, not all the time, but here and there. So why not address it as it's happening rather than wait and have something be finished and then have to go back and refinish it? But it's a very closed system, very closed system. And one of those systems, like the good old boy network, where it's always been done this way. Even if it doesn't make sense, it's always been done this way. And so I struggle with that. And I communicate, I try to communicate in such a way that, someone's not offended, to hopefully show them that there's a different side or a different way of looking at it. And, my mind says, and I'm the one paying for the house, so you might want to do it like how I want it done, and all of that. What do I want? I don't want the grass up against the sides of the house, and they put it there anyway. I mean, what do I want? I didn't want that. And who is that I that didn't want that? That's that, the human aspect of myself, the personality, the one who's very fussy, the one who's perfectionistic about things, who has, ideas running through my mind all the time about the way things should be, rather than, is, and then I ask myself, is it wrong to to speak up and get it the way that I want it to be, if that can be achieved from the get-go? Is it wrong to do that? And my mind says, well, hell no. Be nice about it, be kind about it, be loving about it. If you have to schmooze somebody to get it done that way, get it, do it. What is being hurt here? And then the other part of the mind says, I should just be chill out and accept everything exactly as it goes down. But there's such a strong resistance to that, like, oh, no way. No way. No way. I'm not going to let it just ride when it can be fixed right here and right now. I mean, you have to fix it after the fact. Why not fix it now? Some things just makes no sense to me whatsoever. And to simply rest with, oh, chill out, just be cool about it. That just doesn't work for me. And I'm just being straight up about it. I mean, it just doesn't work for me. I feel more peaceful when I address it, when I communicate, when I have conversation with the contractor that's actually doing the work. And I don't want to evade the anxiety that I feel as I, see these things happen. I want to notice that anxiety, but if there's something that I can actually do that's a simple solution right then and right there and be peaceful and loving about it, I'm like, why not? Why not? Just because it's always been done that way doesn't make it right. And sometimes, and it's just, this is just my experience. As a female, when you show up on a male-dominated job and you suggest something different than what has always been done that way, it doesn't always go over real well, but sometimes, and for me at least, more often than not, the contractors agree with me and they end up doing as I ask them to do without having to go through all of these other channels to get it done because they don't want to come back a second time either. But I do notice that wanting it to be the way I want it to be and having that also be associated with the money part of it. It's like I'm paying. I'm not, this is not free. You're not giving this to me. I'm paying for it. And so I want it to be the way I want it to be. And that I is the personal self, the Kathy character. And that I does experience anxiety, or the need to control, or the perfectionistic piece of myself, trying to get it to go the way I want it to go, period. So the evading part of it is, I don't want to evade that there's something there that's bothering me. And I have a feeling like I need to go and address it with someone and instead stay home and just try to rest, accept, and trust that it's going to go just like you want it to go or just like you planned for it to go or just like your designer said it would go. It just doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. And so, if I can have some sort of influence and alleviate a problem for them and a problem for me and rid myself of the anxiety, I do it. I'm not very, I don't take a roundabout pathway. I'm like straight on with my request for, hey, this is how I requested it be done. It doesn't seem to have been done that way. I would appreciate if you took care of that. If you have any questions, let me know. Blah, 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 blah. And it's so far it's going my way for the most part. But I do notice that those are those, what do I really want? What do I really want? All those things that I'm talking about have nothing to do with what I say I really want. So the question is, do I really want what I say I really want? Is that the highest priority? And right now, at least at this moment in time, there seems to be a real mixture of what I want, because in the world, addressing these time-sensitive matters is important to me. And so I am involved in that. And sometimes remembering that what I truly want, which is a direct experience of the truth of myself as pure consciousness resting unequivocally and unabashedly unaffected by anything external to myself, that's not my experience. That's not my experience. But yet it is an aspiration. And I try to return to that as often as I can. And I try to be with that even as I'm communicating through these other, piddly things of what I want. But so noticing it all. Get it done. Excellent. Get it done right. Do it right the first time. What the hell? I mean, how many times do we have to redo things when we could do it right the first time? It makes it so much easier for everybody. But this says that there's a simple, honest way that leads directly to the heart of understanding, not the understanding that is the false understanding of the mind. The mind wants to say, well, you understand how you want it done. And there may be some factual relevance to that, but if there's anxiety involved or like an upset involved, that just lets me know that my attention has been diverted to something external, like this house project, in such a way that I've allowed it to disturb that central point, which is the truth of who I am. And that's really what I want more than anything, is I want to be in the world, but not of the world. I want to be in that center, in that heart of understanding, that simple, honest way where I'm led directly to what to say, what to do, whether I should go over there or not go over there, all of that. So the next piece is called righteousness. And righteousness, at least in my mind, is simply that, the need to be right, to have it my way, to be driven by, self-will, small self-will, to not give in to the heart of understanding, to not be led directly, to take the bull by the horns, to, be the boss and tell everybody how it should be done, how you want it done. What I want, there I go again. What do you want? And being honest with myself, what do you want? And as I said, right now, I seem to want more than one thing. I seem to want more than just only my aspiration, which is the direct experience of self in a consistent, livable way in life, no matter the external circumstance. So again, this is called righteousness. Beloved, give yourself to me. Do not hesitate. Do not procrastinate. Your work has come. There is nothing to fear when you face me. Claim your divine inheritance. Claim your eternal mind. Claim your soul freedom. Claim me. In me lies your strength, your work, your very life. Face truth and live in divine content. This day, face truth. And the sun of righteousness will shine in you. Sun, SUN. We've seen a lot of the tips have been about light and darkness. And so when I see this term, Sun, SUN, of righteousness, to me it's like that light, the light of truth, the light of myself. So again, this day, face truth, and the sun of righteousness will shine in you. Open every door. Open every door. Go forth in joy. Return in gratitude. Seek me. Embrace my love everywhere. Seek stillness, sweeping stillness. Under no circumstances, return to unnecessary tasks. Be free, wise. Knowing all, giving all to me. Dwell in me, in my love, in my wisdom, in my peace, and you will know me as your spirit, as your breath of life. Love me in yourself, one with you. Not as a name or a figurehead. I am you. That's the end of that section called Righteousness. And interestingly enough, that word righteousness was only used that one time as the sun of righteousness shining in me. So it's not used as I started off with, which was, the way I think about righteousness is that there's this little me, this little Kathy with, a personality that wants things to go my way. I want to be right. I want to be in charge. You're not the boss of me. I want to control the situation. Follow that voice in the head that gives a thousand suggestions about what you should do. That's not the righteousness that this spoke of at all. Instead, this whole thing talked about giving myself. Seek me, dwell in me, love me, claim me, you are me, I am you. It's not a separate entity that is apart from me, it is myself. And that's, I go back to the most direct means to eternal bliss, chapter 1, number 88. Your true self deserves your attention. Your true self deserves your attention. So, this last line again, love me in yourself. Love me in yourself, one with you, not as a name or a figurehead. I am you. I am you. So, this next piece is called Holy Communion. My love is yours. Be willing to receive me now where you stand. Breathe love divine, gratitude, overwhelming joy. Hold no feeling of sorrow, of unconscious trouble in your heart. Beware of streams that are blocked by insistent denial, unwillingness to change your response. And I'm going to share something. I may have already shared it, but it brought it back to me again, that insistent denial, that unwillingness to change my response. I have a friend who also went through a recent remodel on a home she bought, and in a conversation with me, she was insistent, I mean absolutely insistent, that she was right about something, and that the kitchen designer that she used for her cabinetry was mistaken. And so after apparently going around and around and around about that, the gal said to her, "So is it possible that you can entertain the notion that you might be wrong?" And my friend replied emphatically, even to me, "No." And I was, I have to say, I was a bit like, you know, one of those where you're like, you kind of catch your breath, like, whoa, you weren't even willing to consider that you could have been wrong. You were really that 100% certain that you were right. And in this case, it would be a righteousness, because as we know, if the ego is in charge, taking a side, a full-blown side, with no give at all to the notion that I could be mistaken, and I know at least for myself in my own experience, I am mistaken all the time, all the time. To insist in any way, shape, or form that I can be like completely certain of anything that I think, mind you, is right is a joke at this point to me, even to myself. It's like to say, I know for sure, like Byron Katie, do you know 100%? Are you absolutely certain about anything? And I have found, at least in my own investigation, are you kidding? I don't know anything. There's uncertainty around everything. It's all pretense. When we say, I know, I'm absolutely certain about anything going on in the world, or anything regarding our thinking, or any opinion we hold, or any sort of, you know, judgment we have, any knowledge we seem to hold. Why would I trust that? And so when she said that, I was a little bit taken aback, and I didn't even respond. I didn't, you know, chide her or, you know, say to her, oh my God, you know, I didn't go into any of that. I just took that as like grist for the mill for myself. That you know, we've been calling it darkness, where somebody has a thought, and that would be a dark thought, where you insist that your response, that your unwillingness, that your righteousness is justified, and you have no interest in considering anything other than that. That was just her own little piece of myself that I could look at through her response. No need to criticize her, no need to try to change her mind, no need to point out to her that position, no need to do anything with her. It was about me. Look in your own mind for those scraps of fear, that unwillingness to change your response, that stream of consciousness that is the deterrent to the heart of understanding, the center that you insist on holding to, and then denying that you're, stubborn, or denying that you're being unreasonable, or denying that you're being righteous, and standing in it instead as if you're certain. Or just maybe being totally so blinded by the darkness that you don't even notice the trouble in your own heart that that sort of position holds for you, the pain it brings for you. And so her story was helpful to me. It's like, throwing shade, throwing shade over the light. And I know that the truth of her was not that insistent denial. I know the truth of her was not her unwillingness to change her response any more than it's my truth. And that's why this is again telling us, be willing to receive me now where you stand. If it's in that position of denial, or in that position of unwillingness, or in that position of just, being just a stubborn fool, or being sorrowful over a condition or an experience of the past, or something you're imagining in the future. It says, right in those positions, we can receive the love that we are. We can receive the truth of who we are. We can breathe in love divine. We can be grateful that this moment of darkness, or this shade, if it just feels like somebody's throwing some shade and you're noticing, hey, wait a minute, that doesn't feel light, feels heavy, or that doesn't feel comforting, that doesn't feel open. We can notice when others are throwing shade. We can notice when we're throwing shade, but we have to be willing to do that. That's why it's saying, beware, beware. Hold no feeling of sorrow, of unconscious trouble in your heart. If we're not conscious of the thought stream, it's spinning so rapidly, we're not even paying attention to it. We can be conscious of the feeling of sorrow and know that, hey, there must be trouble in my mind of some sort, trouble in my heart that I'm not seeing. Do I want to be sorrowful? Do I like that? Is that, is that a pain that I'm seeing as whoops. Hang on, let me shut this phone off over here. So, is that something, is that sorrow something I want to keep? What do I really want? Am I so confused about pain that I now think it's pleasure? As A Course in Miracles tells us. Yeah. So again, my love is yours. Be willing to receive me now where you stand. Breathe love divine, gratitude, overwhelming joy. Hold no feeling of sorrow, of unconscious trouble in your heart. Beware of streams that are blocked by insistent denial, unwillingness to change your response. Love me with a quiet mind. I reveal myself in you, and still you doubt me. I bless you with all surrounding kindness, and still you look upon your problems as too difficult to solve. Who frees the harassed soul? Surely not flesh and blood alone. Matter is a vanishing cloud of nothingness without me. The words you dwell upon are embodied in your life. There is a definite way of meditating without striving or straining to receive, while giving yourself in love and joy and faith. Be still. Be true. Open to receive. The mind of light is clearing the inlets of self-deception. The mind of light is clearing the inlets of self-deception. The ways in which we deceive ourselves. At least for me, it's always easier to notice somebody else's mistakes than my own. I don't think it's an uncommon mistake I make. I think a lot of people experience that, where it's like you can't see in yourself the things that other people can see in you. And so this darkness that's been talked about in the tip Regina gave a couple 3 days ago, whatever it is, where within the code there's an opportunity where you run into someone, you hear something on television, you have an opportunity to forgive. To see your own self-deception, to look within your own mind, noticing where there might be, I'll just say, prejudice, where there might be all kinds of things. It could be anything. I mean, any sort of criticism, condemnation, or complaint that I would have about anyone else is within my own mind. It's my own issue. It's an opportunity. The darkness is an opportunity to clear away and notice about myself, something about myself that's covered up. Or if someone points out to me, hey, you might want to consider that position you're talking about from this standpoint, and giving me a way to open my mind, to clear my mind, to seeing in a way that would be, from a personality standpoint at least, outside of the box. So even this darkness that we're calling an opportunity to clear my own mind is coming from that consciousness, from that awareness, that container, which is the mind of light, by the way, allowing everything, 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 everything to appear within itself, knowing that all there really is the isness of light. There really is no darkness. Yet if that's not the experience, I shouldn't deceive myself and say, oh, it's all just consciousness as I'm in pain and suffering and sorrow. It's not helpful to deceive myself in that way, just saying words without experiencing it. And that's why my aspiration is the direct experience, the desire to directly experience in all situations, in all occasions, in all ways, always, to know this mind of light, which is always clear. No matter the deception. Shine, glow in the presence. Oh, I'm almost close. Oh, this works out good. Shine, glow in the presence of the immortal one. Glow in the presence of the immortal one. Love ever lives in you. Believe, receive. And that's the end of that particular piece, which was called Holy Communion. Love ever lives in you because it is you. Love is you. God is love. I was created from God. God is love. I can't be other than what God is, and God is only love. So believe it and receive it and let the rest of it go. Let the self-deception go. Yeah, believe and receive. Yeah. The interesting thing is, believe is BELIE with the lie in it, almost like belief. All beliefs are false beliefs, but what this belief is a pointer to truth. But receive is EI, is EI, no lie in that one. Believe, receive. At any rate, I thank you guys for joining me. It's 3 o'clock. I appreciate you listening. And I left off on, I started on page 242. And I ended at the top of page 245. So we'll begin there next week. And I'm giving up the mic. Have a great afternoon. See ya.